What? Waiting for somebody or not?
For the camera.
For the camera.
So I don't know. Ah, the camera's also. Okay, so let's speak a little bit about this yeshiva, about what's called Kletsk, even though it didn't start here, because in many ways it was typical of certain things. The yeshiva itself started in Slutsk. Slutsk is a much bigger city, it's a few dozen kilometers over, and the Rav of the city, his name was Rabbi Yaakov David Vilowitz Valensky, he was known as the Ritvaz. And he wanted a yeshiva in the city. He recognized without a yeshiva in the city, it's not going to work. He himself, Be'etzim, wasn't close to the Musa movement, but he also understood that without a backbone of Musa and without a chizuk, there's not going to be a yeshiva. He called Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, he wrote to him, and Reb Nosson Tzvi agreed, and he sent a group of 14 bachrim. They called it the Yada Chazaka, Yudala Chazaka, including his own son Reb Leiz Yudel, and Reb Issa Zalman, who was Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein's brother-in-law, and was at that time in Slabotka. He was saying a shir. He sent him to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and 14 brachim to start as the core of the yeshiva. The Rebbetzin Meltzer was not thrilled to come live here. She was living in Slabotka, and Slabotka was a city. It was part of a city. She had a family there. This is Hicks, in case you didn't notice. It's far away. Even with the bus, it took quite a bit from Minsk. This was all the way from Slabotka. She really didn't want to come. He said that since Rav Moshe Mordechai had been there longer, he feels he should go, and he went with the group. Kletz tried to kidnap them, and what happened in the end was they signed with Kletsk, and then Slutsk made a big uproar, and they ended up in Slutsk. They were there from, they founded in 1897. The communists, in World War I came, the communists took over. They moved half the yeshiva here. Reb Aaron Kotler was Reb Issa Zalman's son-in-law, and Reb Aaron Kotler became a Rosh Yeshiva there like at 24. He started saying Shurim. He was remarkable. Speak about it in a second, and he was the one. And so when they split, they moved the yeshiva. Half the yeshiva came here in 1921, and Reb Issa Zalman still continued on in Slutsk. He was by this time he was the Rav in Slutsk. The Ritvaz had moved to Tzfas, and he felt, and this was really a big dilemma. A lot of the rabbanim in Russia, or in whatever Russia had taken over, they didn't know if they should stay because they owe it for the communities. Because if they leave, what's going to be? On the other hand, is there any future? Chavetz Chaim himself had told people to run away. Then he later had Charata. The Lubavitcher Rebbe had told all the rabbanim they have to stay in their place. And most of them were killed out and sent off, almost everybody. And everything did die out in the end. There was no future for 70 years in that area. So Reb Issa Zalman stayed for 2 years. They had to keep the yeshiva, quote-unquote, on the ground, shtick, this, that. Finally, he got the word that he's on the list and he's going to Siberia, and he ran away to here. This was already Poland at the time. He was here for 2-3 years. In 1925, I think it was, he went to Eretz Yisrael, and he left the yeshiva by Reb Aaron Kotler. The yeshiva itself took off. Reb Issa Zalman and Reb Aaron Kotler were two gedolim, very different temperaments. Reb Issa Zalman was extremely calm, sort of very, very, he backed off. He was extremely calm and quiet and thoughtful, that type of personality. Reb Aaron Kotler was an eish lahav. He was a fire. He was a fire in his learning. He was an ilu atzum. His big thing was cheshbening a sugya. He could cheshben out every piece, how it shims or every other piece, any place else. And when he talked the learning, he was like a fire. And he wouldn't tolerate it. If somebody asked a question while they were saying a shir, the person would get it over his head. He was very, very strong that way. And he was extremely strong and passionate in everything else. He attracted a lot of people. I don't know how many people actually understood his shiur. His shiurim were extraordinarily difficult to understand. You had to keep pace, and after a few minutes, most people just lost their Moshe Shaiach too. But they were extraordinarily taken by his fire. I mean, his fire and his Eluishkeit. It was incredible. I mean, he was brilliant beyond words, and he drew people. So Klesk actually had gotten to be quite a big yeshiva by the time the war came around.
What does that mean?
What?
How big is that?
It was 200 plus, I believe, Talmidim. Well over 200. I mean, I have the exact numbers. What?
Was Rebshach here for some time?
Rebshach was here. Rebshach eventually married Rebbe Zalman's niece. Rebshach had been in Slabodka. He also was here later. And this is... So, I guess Rebbe Zalman was a formative figure, but he holds the altar as to being the one who influenced in a big way. Mr. Zalman was extremely close to. Dubiskurov was the one, I think, in learning that he felt afterwards he had become, was the one he was really influenced by and learning. Reb Aaron had already gone to America to collect money in the 30s. He had some kesha. When the war ended up, he ended up going to America, and he worked very hard during the war years desperately to save as many people as he could. The yeshiva disbanded, and typical, some went off to Siberia, some sent off to Siberia, some managed to join up with the yeshiva, and so on. They also went to Lithuania. We'll talk about that at one of the later times. But at the end of the day, he came to America. He, in his trips in the 30s in America, he was appalled at what he saw as the level of learning in America, and he pushed up track of Feivel Mendelovich to make some sort of kollel, something where people will sit and learn. And something they made something like that, and in a sense that became a seed for his yeshiva. He came in 1940, he established the yeshiva there, and the rest is history. But it had to do more than anything else with his person. He was an Eish L'Hava. His passion and his fire was unbelievable. His personal integrity and everything with it was that way. He was passionate and didn't broke a compromise. He was able to plant a seed for something which was unthinkable in America in those days. In those days, Yeshiva University was the far right of the spectrum, and he basically put everybody out. He took over the far right for himself big time and pushed everybody else out. And it had to do with the Koyach of his person. So it's fascinating. His Torah was beyond, I would say, 95% of Talmidim. Somebody told me, I had a cousin of mine who was a Rav in America, and a group of Rabbanim came to Lakewood to hear a shiur from Baron. A Baron invited them. Rabbanim would normally held themselves to be the apotropsim for Torah in America. They sat through the shiur and they were very depressed. They didn't know very much of what was going on. And one of them said, "The other big deal, I don't think anybody here understands either." So they grabbed the Talmud and said, "Say over the shiur." Unfortunately, they grabbed Rabbi Yeshve. So he told them over the whole shiur. And they were doubly depressed. But I heard this from my relative, Baal Kaponim. So this is where it started. So it's a fascinating... the Alta Slabodka planted the seed. He was the one who actually was extraordinarily, extremely significant in guiding the Baron Kotel to become who he was. We'll talk about that when we get Slabodka Mishem. But it was his personality that really made the yeshiva what it was. It's ironic that Klesk had offered and begged for the yeshiva to come there. Didn't work out. And in the end, it did end up in Klesk. And like all the other yeshivas, this became a seed for, he had the yeshiva 20 years, and in America he had it for 20 some odd years. And this really was the seed for everything in America. This is really the seed of the seed for all the other yeshivas in America. That's the significance.
And the Talmidim lived where? Just in people's homes?
Okay, so Talmidim Adarkal lived in people's homes. The difference that Volozhin Institute, it used to be in the old days, they lived out of the goodness of the heart of the families. Their goodness of the heart stopped at some point, and the yeshiva would rent apartments. They would rent, and so the people in town lived off the yeshiva, people in town lived off the yeshiva, and there was a very positive sense, unless the yeshiva paid bills, which was frequent. An example of something I read, until they were able to get food, but finally Rabban was able to get black bread and hot water sweetened with saccharin. So that was satisfactory for a few months, so at least they had the minimal. You know, they didn't present that as being starvation rations. This was okay. They had bread, they had what to drink, and it was fine. That was the way people lived.
Is there anything left of the Torah of Klas? Rabban's Torah, is that?
Rabban's Torah is printed off Mishnah Rabban. So the thing is, the Rabban's Torah, B'darkal, typically had two parts. The Yesodos themselves are deep, and you know you can. They're easily, they are transportable. A Magid Shir can say the Shir. The Cheshbonos he made, you can't say the Shir. No, nobody, I mean, out of the covered Magid Shir, we'll say Magid Shir, maybe understands. But I mean, his Cheshbonos, he went through, Reb Nachum once said, at Oiske Luft at the Sugya. He aired it out. In other words, he shook up all the bits and pieces of it. And then, so is Reb Yechon going with this Sugya? Is he going with that Sugya? They can't hold like him, so I must be holding like him. He kept his Cheshbonos, and he was quicker than quick. So, and it was incredible. And you know, he was extremely, in the Shir itself, he was Eshav. If you asked the middle of the Shir, he got very nervous, and he would tear you to pieces. Then he would apologize afterwards. And someone told me, this is a Chashu Rav was sitting at his Shir, and he asked in the middle, and he ripped into him and says, "You idiot, you're ma'aretz, no thing is, where did you learn? Why did you have the chutzpah to come to the Shir?" You know, like that type of language, very, very shocked. Then, like towards the end of the Shir, he said, "Now that we have your sight, now we can begin to answer the question that Rav so-and-so asked at the Shir," and now it makes sense. So this person asked an acquaintance of mine, like, you know, "I don't understand, I don't get it." He said, "Did you ever see an artist working and someone comes over and asks him some question or bangs him on the shoulder? You blow out." He said, "Reb Aaron's middle of working on the show. He said, you know, he's cold cooler in it, and you're distracting him. That's why he gets very, very upset. But, you know, but once he, you know." But this is, so in a certain sense, whatever we have today in America come out, this is where it came from.
It says that
Iran's
background was in Klutz. His family lived in
Klutz. He was a Suslovich. It could be he had come from Klutz. He was from a small town called Suslovich, I think. I mean, they're all sticks. They're all the same sticks. So I don't know. It could be his family. But I don't know. If it says so, I assume.
When it says it was reestablished Klutz, when he came in the
20s
to Klutz, Slotsk was still around.
It was his own little Slotsk. Yeah, Rebbe Zalman had come back to Slotsk, and he kept it going for 2 years. He split the yeshiva in half. Half the yeshiva he made in Kletsk, which was Poland.
Why was the...
Communist.
Oh, he wanted to... He had
Slutsk itself was already communist. It was by Russia, and the communists did not allow any yeshivas. This was Poland at the time. So Poland was okay. Well, you know, Poland was fine. So they wanted, you know, to split the Macht into two, and they had 50%, you know, punch here, punch there. But at the end of the day, it was a story where... Reb Aaron called the poem something by Kriyas Megillah, you'd be by us already. And they didn't know what it was like he said himself, he didn't know what he said, he just kind of. And then he, right before Purim, he had to escape, you know, overnight. And it wasn't, you couldn't escape anymore, you had to cross the border and run the border and bribe. What was already very difficult, but it was still in the early 20s, the late, you know, it was still gray enough that you could get out of Russia. But that was it. Then it slammed down and that was the end of it.
Zalman ended up in Eretz Yisrael when? Like
25, I think 25. It was. 20, yeah. He left 2-3 years later. He wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael all his life, and that was it. So.